This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Say yes to Pure Leaf Tea and free gas for a year only at True North Convenience Stores. When it comes to quality, say yes to the delicious taste of real brewed Pure Leaf Tea. True North stores are stocked with your favorite flavors like unsweetened, extra sweet, and raspberry. For a limited time, enter for a chance to win free gas for a year. Check the True Rewards app for details or download the mobile app from the Apple or Google Play stores. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Hi, this is Dave Musial, owner of Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, Plumbing, and Electric. With our biggest sale ever, furnaces from $39 a month, furnace and air conditioning combos from $59 a month, plus 72 months interest-free financing and up to a $4,000 system rebate. Four Seasons guaranteed to beat any competitor's price by up to $1,000 guaranteed. So call today for your free in-home estimate and same-day installation.
For all the right reasons, call it 664 Seasons.
Well, good morning. Welcome in. It's Sunday Mass here. Reverend Arcan, nice to have you with us here today. It is March 9th. I want to say a big happy birthday to John Ryder, if he's listening, who's a big reason why I got into this business in the first place. I'd honestly not be here if not for for John D. Ryder. So happy birthday to him. This is also the day Notorious B.I.G. got shot, so sad day, too.
Big day.
Happy day if you're a Celtics fan. What was that, Jacob?
Big day.
Big day. Yes, indeed. I remember that was in high school when Notorious B.I.G. got shot. It was very sad. It wasn't long after Tupac got shot. But with Biggie on the East Coast, just a bigger deal. At any rate, today is a good day if you're a Boston sports fan. Unless you're a hardcore Brad Marchand fan, in which case you're probably still sitting Shiva, I believe is what they call it in the other religion there. This is, of course, Sunday Mass. But, yeah, it's been a tough one. It's been a tough week for Bruins fans. It's been a tough week for Brad Marchand fans. And while I think they did a phenomenal job on Sunday skate, Razor finally facing the music, which is nice, along with Bridget and Scott McLaughlin, I thought they did a phenomenal job covering every aspect of what we saw this week with all the moves that got made, the team blowing up the roster, Brad Marchand going to be wearing a Florida freaking Panthers jersey, which I still can't get over, and the other moves that were made as well, some of the new players that are here, what the rebuild's going to look like, all of that, I thought they were tremendous. So I'm going to give that just a little bit to breathe. I'll give the hockey talk a bit to breathe. We'll jump on that mostly in the next hour, and we'll go ahead and start here today with what you just heard, which was the hottest ticket of the year, I guess. The Boston Celtics and the LA Lakers, a $400 get-in price on a StubHub that I saw right before we got there. It was my friend's birthday last night, and we teased the idea of going to the game. We were sort of like, all right, if the prices drop like by 65%, then we'll think about it. We'll take out a loan and we'll go to the game. But they didn't. They climbed. It was up to like 440, I think, by the time he got the tip off. Ridiculous. I mean, ridiculous. And the Celtics ended up, I think, proving some things to the world in that game last night, which we'll get to here in just a moment. But I was shocked at what a hot ticket that was. The Celtics are not necessarily, I mean, listen, when it's a good game, when it's a good opponent, you're going to see the prices tick up a little bit. I didn't think you'd see them go up, I don't know, eightfold from what they normally are up in the 300s. Like, that's something. And it really does, to me, confuse me. Because I believe that NBA ratings are down. I don't think that those are fake ratings. I think those are all true. I think that there's some issues with the product and that people are turning away from it in certain markets. But in the right markets, in the right places, we'll see what the TV numbers were for that game last night. But that was a big one. And ESPN, you could tell. I mean, they really milked it, especially with this documentary going on right now, the Celtic City on HBO, which new episode tomorrow, I believe. Looking forward to that. But yeah, tons of old clips. I know they usually do that, but you could tell. Like this felt different. Luka Doncic's first game with the Lakers against the Celtics, and the Celtics putting on a show. In particular, your two best guys, Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, who I do want to talk about. But I think in a lot of ways, that game proved to me that, yes, Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown are superstars. They're in their prime. The Celtics are incredibly lucky to have drafted those guys. I mean, lucky, I guess. Lucky to be in a position to draft those guys. They were smart to do it. Lucky to be in that position. And to have picks like that when guys like that were available, that's sort of what I mean. I don't mean that they were lucky, that Danny Ainge was lucky. Danny Ainge did a magnificent job making the moves to put this team together. So I don't want to take away from him. But the fact that Jason Tatum was available in one of those years, the fact that Jaylen Brown was available in one of those years, in the years where you just so happen to have these picks that you fleece the Brooklyn Nets with, Kevin Garnett and Paul Pierce, and who was that? Jason Terry, I think, was the third one. It all. I think the universe really worked in the Celtics' favor, and they were also very shrewd. So it wasn't just one, it wasn't just the other, but I think that in order to fully appreciate this, you look at teams like the Lakers. You look at teams like the Sixers. And in those two drafts where they drafted Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, it was the same draft order, 1, 2, 3, and the Lakers and the Sixers were there too. Now, the Lakers are a different story because the Lakers can attract greatness and they get all these trades, and it just seems like the league breaks for them more so than any other team in any other league maybe in the history of organized sports. Doesn't it seem like that? It used to seem like that with the Yankees. I feel like over the last 20 years or so, that's kind of dipped off a little bit. Montreal and the NHL, but that too. I mean, look at them now. With the Lakers, it's usually just a year or two of irrelevance, and then all of a sudden the three biggest names in the sport are all back on their team, and it's just like, okay, great. Well, here comes Dwight Howard and Steve Nash. I know they weren't good that year, but like, here we go. Okay, great. Now what? Oh, LeBron's coming to the Lakers? Of course he is. Anthony Davis? Sure, why not? Luka Doncic? Yeah, bring him on over. Okay, Lakers. Wilt Chamberlain. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Like, it doesn't matter. You go on any point in history, and this is what was going on with the Lakers since they moved to L.A., really. Unless you want to go back to George Mikan and the Minneapolis Lakers, I guess you could do that. But yeah, it's constant with them. And their draft picks were, what, Lonzo Ball and Brandon Ingram? Those guys are long gone. those guys were on the Lakers for, what, 10 seconds? Meanwhile, over in Philadelphia, they tried to build this whole thing around Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid. Obviously, that didn't work. Markelle Fultz ended up being a bust. And now here you are, the Boston Celtics coming out of that, the clear winners, and potentially the next dynasty in the NBA. But this adds a nice element to it because no one really knows who's coming out of the West. I have no idea who's coming out of the West. If it's the Lakers, great. If it's Celtics-Lakers in the finals, great. That's a rivalry no one gets tired of, I don't think. No one around here does, that's for sure. Nationally, I think it'll do pretty well. Much, much better than last year with Dallas and Kyrie, even though there was a thing there. The Dallas Mavericks organization and the Celtics, there's just not the same kind of juice. Celtics-Lakers, there certainly would be. I think Celtics-Nuggets would be pretty good, too. Not sure about the Thunder. That market's just meh. And Denver did win one recently, so I don't know. I mean, we'll see. But you got to get there first. And I think what you saw last night in that game with the Celtics was proof that while Tatum and Brown are spectacular, they won that game in the end. The Lakers made a big run in the fourth quarter. Celtics were up by 21 in the fourth quarter, and they cut the lead down to 4. And the reason why the Celtics were able to hold on was because of 2 offensive rebounds, one by Derek White and one by Drew Holiday, and I think both were Jaylen Brown misses for 3. And they missed a lot of shots in that fourth quarter. They made them when it counted, but they missed a ton of shots in that fourth. Turnovers, kind of sloppy fourth quarter all in all. The third quarter, which we'll get to in a second, was, I thought, a masterclass in defense, and they completely shut down that entire Lakers team. LeBron left with a groin injury. But that first one, I think it was Jaylen Brown airballed the 3. And here comes Derek White out of nowhere. I think they were up 7 at that point. Derek White comes flying in out of nowhere, grabs the rebound. They kick it back out, flip it over to Tatum on the other wing, and he hits a 3, and now it's a 10-point game. And then back down the other way, I think it got back down to 7 again. Jaylen Brown misses another 3, and here comes Drew Holiday out of nowhere, picking up the offensive rebound, keeping the possession away from the Lakers, who had been answering back most of the quarter. They went on a big, big run to cut that lead down. It was not 17-0, but you just saw it. I mean, they locked in. They were hitting their threes. Reeves was hitting the threes. Luka was going crazy. LeBron was backing down Peyton Pritchard. Like, it just, you know, they were clicking. And it took them a while to get there. And by the way, Luka Doncic, I think he's a great player. But, oh, man, could you see plastered all over the place why people get sick of him, why they got sick of him in Dallas? They shouldn't have traded him, but I was watching him last night, and I was like, I kind of get it. He runs back down the floor. He's on defense. He's holding his lower back. He's like, oh, my back. I can't do it. Oh, I'm not going to make it. Oh, he gets the ball back. He's in the post. He's backing guys down, doing behind-the-back fadeaways. And it's like, well, wait a minute. What happened to the back there, Luke? It looks like the back's doing okay. And then he's back on defense. Oh, my back. Oh, my God, I can't. Oh, geez, it's so hard to play defense with this bad back that I have. Back on offense, no problem. Oh, my God, it's so transparent with him, isn't it? He just doesn't like playing defense. Simple as that. There's a guy, I mean, there's superstars who don't like playing defense. We've seen it all throughout the history of the NBA. Some of the best ones did play great defense. Jordan, great defense. You know, LeBron, I think, was a great defender. I think he's still pretty good, but not what he used to be. But Luka Doncic, man, he just doesn't want to. He's like a little kid. You know, he's like, oh, I'm so hurt. And then they're like, oh, I feel so sick. And then you offer him like a cupcake or something. And they're like, ooh, cupcake. He's trying to play defense. He's like, oh, I can't do it. Well, here, we'll give you the ball open for three. He's like, ooh, open three-pointer. It's really funny. Like, he's a great player. I mean, really, he's tremendous. And he had a great game. 34 points on 22 shots. He had 8 rebounds, 3 assists. He turned the ball over a good amount. But he's still, I mean, just a phenomenal offensive force of nature. As is LeBron. LeBron had a great game, too. One assist away from a triple-double. He almost had a triple-double in the first half. He was very, very good. Left the game with that groin injury, as I mentioned, and no one else really did anything. Dalton Knecht had a couple of plays in 24 minutes. Austin Reeves hit a couple of threes, but, like, I don't know. I didn't really feel like anybody else on that team was stepping up and making plays. Meanwhile, on the Celtics, I just gave you Derek White. I just gave you Jrue Holiday. How about Al Horford? I mean, really, Al Horford... 38 minutes from Al Horford in a big national game like this. I'll say this. It's not like he was going up against the quickest guys in the world, okay? LeBron, Luka Doncic. I mean, they were trying to hunt him down and get that matchup so that those guys could blow by him, or I guess whatever it is they were trying to do. And Al Horford, there's a stat that I saw that Dean Oliver, if you're not familiar, Dean Oliver is a... I think he's an author. Yeah, he's a basketball on paper. He wrote that. He's also a sports analytic pioneer, as he says in his Twitter bio. And he had some stats on Al Horford that, I'll be honest with you, I don't 100% understand, but I get the gist. He says Al Horford faced 23 isolations last night, second most in tracking history. Wow. Nice job, J.J. Redick. You just keep hunting the guy out, and it doesn't work. And then you finally give up at the end. J.J. Redick, he just wrote down on the board. He's like, yeah, ISO Al Horford, and just stuck with it all game. Al Horford faced 23 ISOs last night, second most in tracking history. He allowed just 0.39 points per direct play. That is a plus 5.2 defensive net points, and those were the best of the entire day, not of that game, but of the entire NBA day. He was the best ISO defender out of any basketball player, NBA basketball player, in the league. And they were constantly trying to hunt out that matchup. And I get it. I mean, Al Horford's 38 years old. They were trying to hunt it out with LeBron, who's 40, but I understand, you know, like, I get the gist. I see what they're trying to do. And Al Horford stepped up. He was great in that Denver game, too. Al Horford has been tremendous lately. And, I, you know, like, he's one of those guys. I know he's not going to be a lifelong Celtic because he wasn't drafted here, and he left twice. He went to OKC and Philly. But he's a guy who I don't want him to leave again. I think that he should finish out his career here. There's no reason to move on from a guy who's just such a winning player in this system, in this environment. He thrives in these big games. So does Derek White, by the way. Derek White, very, very clutch. And in general, I just thought that was an all-around nice win. You saw a little bit of dominance early on from the Lakers, I should say, in that first quarter. It looked like the Lakers were about to run away with it before the Celtics settled into their offense. Celtics go on a big run. That third quarter, I thought their defense was fantastic. Luka Doncic is the only one who could score in that quarter. And by the time they really made their run in the fourth, the lead was big enough that the Celtics were able to hold them off. And they had a couple of big, big clutch offensive rebounds there in the last, like, 2 minutes that that sealed that one. So we'll go ahead and get with the Celtics and what happened with them last night. Looking at the schedule going forward, it is very, very soft. They have an extremely soft schedule the rest of the way. I think only three games against teams that are in the top six in their conferences. So they should continue to build momentum here as they get to the playoffs. I'm doubtful that they're going to catch Cleveland, but anything's possible. We'll get to that. We also have to bid farewell and maybe throw some dirt on the Ronnie Stanley dream as the New England Patriots now see their number one free agent target as far as several reports are concerned, and as far as I'm concerned, should have been their number one target on the offensive line there. Left tackle Ronnie Stanley re-signing with the Baltimore Ravens. Very, very sad news for Patriots fans and probably for Mike Vrabel trying to build in from the inside out. We have that for you. We have the latest on DK Metcalf, and of course, we're going to talk a lot of Bruins here this morning as the Brad Marchand trade ripple effect still being felt, and the Bruins, despite this big emotional loss, go out there and kick the crap out of the Tampa Bay Lightning yesterday. So we'll have all of that for you. We'll get to that next, right after Jacob gets you caught up on what...
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Survivor 48 is here, and alongside it, we're bringing you a brand new season of On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast. If you're a Survivor superfan, you won't want to miss this deep dive into every episode where we break down how we designed the game, the biggest moves, your burning questions. It's the only podcast that gives you inside access to Survivor that nobody else can. Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast with me, Jeff Probst, every Wednesday after the show, wherever you get your podcasts.
It's trending. That was Daniel Jeremiah on the Pat McAfee Show. By the way, what part of Boston is that Boston Connor guy from? Did you hear his reaction there when they said DK? He's like, yeehaw! Rat him, cowboy! It's like, what? The guy's got a mullet.
The West End.
West End of what? Boston? Or the
no.
West, like Western Mass?
Like Western United States.
He's from the West. Okay, so he's not even the New England part. He's not even from the East Coast.
I honestly have no idea.
Oh, okay. Either way, he sounds like he's from Wyoming. Like he sounds like he just got done roping a steer at the rodeo. He's like, but can you play that again? Can you just play the reaction after they said DK Metcalf? Everyone in the NFL thinks that DK Metcalf's going to the Patriots. Boston Connor's like, yeah, DJ, woo!
What do you mean in the league?
Yeah.
What do you mean?
I mean, they are pumped up over there, and good for him. I mean, listen, good for all those guys. That show does very, very well. Not to make fight. Just it's not. Whenever something good happens in Boston sports, it's very rare.
I like that DJ. Keep spinning
that
wheel.
Yeehaw! I like that DJ. Yeah. It's just, I don't know, maybe you hang out with Pat McAfee long enough, all the Boston kind of gets drained out of you. It could be that too. At any rate, the celebration's over. I know that was for DK Metcalf, not necessarily Ronnie Stanley, but Ronnie Stanley re-signing with the Baltimore Ravens. I have some thoughts on that, which none of them are good. It sucks that they do this and they have this happen 2 days before free agency starts. And I know it's the legal tampering window, or what are they calling it now? The negotiating window. They're trying to make it seem like it's not so bad anymore. That begins tomorrow. I mean, listen, we're here. Free agency is here. And Ronnie Stanley right before then, when it seemed like all signs were pointing to the fact that him and the Ravens couldn't get an extension done, they could not get a deal done, and a premier left tackle, the only premier left tackle to hit that was potentially going to hit free agency, was going to get there. We were 48 hours away, and Ronnie Stanley looked like he was about to hit the market, but no. No. That would just be too easy for the Patriots. Instead, we're going to have to get creative again. I say we like I'm in the front office, but you know what I mean. Instead, the Patriots are going to have to now get creative. They're either going to have to draft one of those short-arm Tyrannosaurus Rex left tackles and bring them in and hope that they can be the first tackle ever with the shortest arms in the world. to go out there and be good, or they'll have to try and swing some trade the way the Chicago Bears did to bring in Joe Tooney, only you're going to have to do it with a tackle, and no one's giving away their tackles. Tackles just aren't hitting the market. Top-end talent doesn't hit the market, period, these days, unless there's something really wrong with the guy. It's just you don't see it. It's upsetting. When the Patriots, when you saw that they had $130 million in cap space to spend, I was tempering my expectations. Maybe not to this extent. Maybe to this extent it's a little much, but I sort of looked at it and thought, you know, they had a lot of cap space last year. They did. And what was really even out there? A defensive tackle, a guard, Calvin Ridley. Sure, it would have been nice if they signed all three of those guys, but would that have made them a playoff team? Probably not. They mostly re-signed their own players, and they weren't super thrilled with what was out there on the market. They still should have made some of those signings. I mean, they ended up starting the year with $50 million in cap space. What the hell's the point of that? It's not rollover minutes. You don't get the key, you know, like nothing. You don't get a credit for them or anything. You're just a team that is not very talented, and you didn't spend much to get more talented. And that's why you won four games again. And now here it is, this even bigger windfall that you have of money, $130 million, more or less. And all the best players are not going to hit the market. I mean, it's as simple as that. We'll see about Chris Godwin. We'll see about some of these other players. But I think that it's becoming more and more clear that in the event that any premium player does go to free agency, not only are you going to have to overpay substantially, you're going to have to pounce. You're going to have to pounce. Do you see what's going on here? I mean, like, there's a lot of teams with cap space. The Patriots have the most, but there's a lot of teams out there with a considerable amount of cap space and teams that don't have holes all over the roster. They have one hole, right? The Chargers, for example, or the Vikings. The Vikings have $63 million in cap space. The Chargers have $90 million in cap space. Chargers need some help in more than one play. I mean, they need help at wide receiver, and they could probably use some help on their defense. But Harbaugh's in charge of the defense. Their defense was pretty good last year. I think he could probably whip that defense into shape, even if it's not the most talented all-pro at every position type of defense. But they do need help at wide receiver. They need help on their offense. And they're going to be competing with the Patriots. And they're also Los Angeles, where the weather's pretty good. And the nightlife's maybe a little better than it is in North Attleboro. And you know what I mean? Like, it's just, this is the thing. You're not in a situation like 2021 where you're the only team with a lot of cap space. In 2021, the Patriots had a ton of cap space and no one else did. This year, it's not like that. So if you were expecting them to go out and be able to just land whoever they want to because they have all this money to spend and no one else does, well, you're going to be disappointed this time around. You are. 2021, I mean, that was fun. I remember being excited that they did sign Hunter Henry and Jonnu Smith and Matthew Judon, not so much Nelson Aguilar, and I didn't really know a lot about Kendrick Bourne at the time. He ended up being a good signing too, but I was excited. It was a transformative time. They had a rookie quarterback. Well, they didn't have him yet, but they eventually were going to have a rookie quarterback, and they had set him up for success, or whoever was going to be the quarterback, whether it was going to be Cam Newton or whoever at the time. We didn't know. But they had brought in a lot of weapons on the offense, and you could tell that they were making a serious investment. And they were able to do that because they had the cap space and because a lot of other teams didn't. The Patriots have 125, according to overthecap.com, Patriots are at $125 million in cap space. The Chargers are second with 90. The Commanders, 80. The Cardinals, 78. The Steelers, 64. The Vikings, 63. The Seahawks, who are going to be, you know they're going to be looking to do something here. They just traded their quarterback. $63 million for the Seahawks, $61 million for the Jaguars, $60 million for the Titans, $54 million for the Cowboys, $51 million for the Bengals, $51 million for the Jets, $51 million for the Lions, $50 million for the Raiders, $45 million for the Bears. These aren't huge numbers, but they're enough that they can go out there and snake away the guy that you got your eye on, Patriots, unless you go crazy, unless you really overspend. And with Ronnie Stanley, I mean, that was a guy I was expecting them to come into free agency and give a wild offer to. Like 3 years, $100 million or something like that. You know what I mean? I thought it was going to be a crazy number for him. Because how else are you going to get him? He's leaving the Baltimore Ravens, what, to come to the New England Patriots? It's not like he won a bunch of championships there. If he wants to go somewhere where he has a chance to win, you don't come here. You stay in Baltimore, which he ended up doing. But how could you entice him away? You make him an offer he can't refuse. You make him a financial offer that is just ridiculous to turn down. You get a call from the Players Association if you turned it down. That kind of offer. And is the premium talent fades away. You wonder now, what exactly are they going to be able to do? What sort of moves are they even going to make? Is Cam Robinson someone that you feel good about? I guess it's not the worst thing in the world. I don't know. I mean, I'd like to say that I had my heart set on Stanley, but even then, I mean, I kind of knew this day would get here. It definitely raised your expectations, raised your hopes up by waiting until almost the last possible minute before you re-signed the guy. But that was a real kick in the stomach, wasn't it? Seeing that whole thing, I was just like, man, can anything break right for these guys? I really hope this doesn't mean that they reach for Will Campbell at 4 and end up signing a left tackle with the 4th overall pick, who they don't really believe in, but they think they need to because none of the tackles ended up being available in free agency, and that's the plan that they made, and now they can't get away from it. And, you know, like, that's the type of thing that can send you further into a spiral. And I would hate to see Mike Vrabel's first offseason begin with a spiral. But right now, it was seeing Stanley get signed like that, that was upsetting. I was upset by that. There's not a lot of other great left tackles out there. And if you look in the trade market, I mean, listen, the trade market is whatever you want it to be. There's moves getting made. Other teams have made their opening salvos. The Patriots have not. The Patriots are sitting around, biding their time, getting ready for Monday. And at this point, I'm not even sure what the big opening salvo could even be. Sort of like with the Red Sox this year. Like, coming into the offseason with the Red Sox, I think we all expected them to go hard after Soto, Corbin Burns, right? Like, those were the expectations. We all thought, okay, with all this money, and you know that John Henry really wanted Soto, and if they're willing to spend $700 million on the guy, then they're probably going to just chuck money around. And after they missed on Soto and the Burns thing kind of dragged, I guess they were never really in on him, all of a sudden the opening salvo was Aroldis Chapman. And Red Sox fans are sitting there like, huh? What? This is the guy? That's weird. Thought we were shooting a little higher than this guy's, but all right, fine. Aroldis Chapman, okay. And eventually things improved. Garrett Crochet was a top-line thing. Bregman, he waited till the very end, but that was a lot of money spent on the best available right-handed bat. I'm not here to relitigate the Red Sox in their offseason, but it was not the opener that we were expecting. So I guess as we sit here and wait for the Patriots to strike their opening salvo, and not a lot of other teams have, it's mostly just been the Bears and the Chiefs, and not the Chiefs, the Commanders. I guess the Chiefs were on the other end of that trade, but they ended up getting rid of their offensive lineman and not trading for one. And I wonder what moves are out there to be had right now, and if the Patriots are maybe making a mistake by not taking advantage of this trade market. Now, there's still a lot of time between now and the draft, and certainly during the draft where they can swing trades, even beyond that, even into the season. But you want to go into the season with a team that you feel good about, with a roster that you feel confident in, and it seems like right now free agency is going to be limited. There's only so much talent that's going to be out there. There's a lot of competition, unlike 2021, where you had money to spend and no one else did. A lot of other teams have money to spend, and not nearly the weaknesses that you have on your roster. You have weaknesses everywhere. There's no real one place outside of quarterback, number one corner, and I don't know, kick returner. Although, I'm hearing Marcus Jones isn't in Mike Vrabel's plans, which that would stink. I would hate to see them give up on Marcus Jones. I know that it wasn't a big year for him last year, but he's a guy who I still think has a ton of potential, big play potential, and I'd hate to see him just give up on a guy like that. I'd like to keep him around and see if you can turn him into something here before you move on. But again, this also implies that they have some big off-season plan and that they're confident that they can execute it. Because right now, I'm wondering how much of this wish-casting, and a lot of it's not really been done. Like, we've heard Elliot Wolf, and we've heard Mike Vrabel come out and talk about their vision for the team and how they want to build in the trenches and all this other stuff, and that's fine. I mean, that's not really specific. That's just, all right, we're going to get offensive linemen and defensive linemen. Okay, are you going to go after the top-line guys? Who are the top-line guys going to be? Are you going to be looking for diamonds in the rough? Are you going to be looking in the trade market for established players? Are you going to be looking to draft at those positions? How exactly do you plan on attacking this? I think those are all relevant questions, and I'm not sure that we really can get a straight answer to it until we see what the availability is. Now, for the tackle position, it was kind of slim to begin with, and I think that now with Stanley's out, you're really, really looking at a thin class here. And I do think that with offensive line, generally, it's not always about getting some big name. Like, it's nice to get a big name, but you can find diamonds in the rough on the line, I think, more so than you can in other positions in the modern-day NFL. You can find the guy who can go out there and block and in the right setting be, or in the right, next to the right teammates be better than he was maybe in a previous team. But it's also very tough to predict those things. Right now, here's what your tackle market looks like. Cam Robinson, 29 years old, is at the top of the market. He made $18 million last year. Joe Noteboom of the LA Rams, 29, about to turn 30. He'll be 30 next year. 13-3 for him. Tyron Smith still kicking around, 34 years old. His 15th year. Morgan Moses. It's both the Jets tackles right there, left and right. Moses is old, too. He's 34. Cleveland tackle, swing tackle, Jedrick Wills, Trent Brown, you want to bring him back? George Fant, Cornelius Lucas, Kelvin Beachum, DJ Humphreys, Isaiah Wynn's out on the market, Josh Jones, Trent Scott, Michael Dunn, Cody Ford. I don't know. I don't even know who half those guys are. I'm reading off a list right now. I think it's more likely that you could sign one of those no-name tackles I just mentioned, and that he can slot in and be useful, functional. Maybe not elite, but better than Vidarian Lowe and the schlock that you had there last year. I don't think it's guaranteed, but I think it's more possible that that happens than that you go and sign some KJ Osborne-type wide receiver and find your offensive weapons that way. I just don't think that's plausible. So I'm still kind of the mind that in free agency, they should be spending their money in the trenches. The only problem is now with Stanley off the market is that the trenches just aren't as appealing anymore. And that's a problem. 617-779-7937 is the phone number. We'll get to your phone calls here in just a moment. Bill Barnwell had a whole thing on DK Metcalf that I want to get to and how his trade request fits with certain teams, contract, draft picks, things like that. DK Metcalf could end up being a guy, as you heard there on the Pat McAfee show, much to the delight of Boston Connor, could be heading to New England. So we'll get to that with your phone calls right after this. It's the Christian Arcan Show here, WEEI. It's actually Sunday, Mass. You can hear the Christian Arcan Show weeknights, 6 to 10, right here on WEEI. Nice to have you with us here. We'll get to your phone calls in just a moment. I see some calls lining up here to talk Patriots, some Red Sox calls as well. So we'll get to you momentarily here. My investigation as to where Boston Connor came from, I don't know. I don't see it. I guess he went to Fairfield? Maybe he was like out of town, like, what's his name, at Barstool, that guy who had that whole thing. Who's from Chicago, but he's actually not, he's from Boston, you know what I'm talking about? That was like a whole thing, Jacob, you know what I'm saying?
I do not, but I'm going to research this.
So Big Cat from Barstool.
He's the Chicago guy, but he's a Boston-based guy at the same time.
Newton guy, yeah. And he moved to Chicago. I guess he went there for college and just, you know, fell in love with it and became a Chicago sports fan. And honestly, I don't give a crap about any of this. You know, he can root for whoever he wants. He's does this character. He's been phenomenally successful in doing it. But, I mean, come on. Like, you know, we know not everyone's like that all the time. That was a whole thing. I wonder if that's maybe what we got with Boston Connor here. Maybe he was like from, I don't know. Again, he looks like he's from Wyoming. Maybe he was like a Wyoming guy. And then he went to Fairfield, and he just fell in love with the beaches in Fairfield or whatever, I guess. I almost went to Fairfield. And when I toured the campus, that was the main draw. Like, I thought it was a good school. But I remember touring the campus, and they showed like the beach houses you could live in when you were like a junior or senior. I was like, that's awesome. But I didn't end up going there. But I could see how that might entice somebody to want to embrace the Boston lifestyle out there in 3.5 hours away in Fairfield, Connecticut. But at any rate, we're not here to talk about Boston Connor or any of that stuff. I want to talk about this DK Metcalf story that I saw in ESPN yesterday. It was Bill Barnwell, and it's a whole DK Metcalf profile, basically, of the best team fits and what the best offers are going to be to the Seahawks. So his initial premise was that Metcalf, the Seahawks shouldn't trade him. And I kind of agree. Like, they just let Tyler Lockett go. They just traded their quarterback. It sounds like they're going to be going after Sam Darnold. And if they do, Jaxon Smith-Njigba is a very good wide receiver, but you might as well just hold on to your elite wide receiver in DK Metcalf, who's better than him and who's a multi-year 1,000-yard guy and who I think, you know, another offense with another quarterback would be just as good as he was with Geno Smith. Or whoever, Russell Wilson. Metcalf has an $18 million unguaranteed base salary due for the final year of his deal in 2025, but Seattle structured his extension and restructured his deal in later years, which gives him a $32 million cap hit this year. Whether it comes from the Seahawks or another team, Barnwell writes, Metcalf is going to land a new contract over the next 12 months. Any team trading for him would probably sign him to a deal at the time of the trade, and while the Seahawks could get a new contract done this offseason or after 2025, general manager John Schneider could use the franchise tag next year to keep Metcalf through 2027 if he wants, although Metcalf is surely hoping to avoid that tag. He says, I would be surprised if Metcalf landed a market-resetting deal north of $35 million, like the pack that Justin Jefferson signed with the Vikings last year. He hasn't been that caliber. He has a high floor, but he's topped 1,115 yards once in 6 years and made two Pro Bowls. I respect an argument that Metcalf might have produced better numbers in a different offense or with a more spectacular set of QBs, but it's tough to make the case he's worth a deal approaching 40 per year. Now, 30 per year doesn't seem out of the question. A four-year, $128 million deal would make the most sense, $75 million guaranteed at the time, with the signing between 2025 and 2026, in addition to the $18 million he's due in 2025. So that's a long way of saying that if you trade for DK Metcalf, it's going to cost you. It's going to cost you in draft capital, and then it's going to cost you in your wallet. And I wonder, based on the reports that came out after the Joe Tooney trade was made to the Chicago Bears, where it seemed as though the Patriots were unwilling to match the price of Joe Tooney, which, again, I don't think was that fourth-round pick. I don't think that was the price they were worried about matching. I think it was what you were going to have to pay Joe Tooney after you traded for him. And this right here is a lot to pay for DK Metcalf. Now, he's worth it, and I'd even pay him more than this. Honestly, it's New England. I'd pay more to keep him here. But I could see this scaring the crack. I could see it scaring management and ownership and them thinking, you know, there's all these options that we have out there. Let's go with something else. Let's go with something less expensive. Let's go with something a little less risky where we don't have to give up so much draft capital and then pay so much money just for this one guy. I mean, it's DK Metcalf. How good is he really? He's better than anything you got. And I would hate to see guys like him fall by the wayside because the Patriots think there's just so many options out there and we'll land somebody. No, no, no. Be proactive, will you? You sit on the sidelines, you watch other teams make moves, and all of a sudden there's nothing left. All of a sudden you're sitting there waiting for Ronnie Stanley to hit free agency, and there's nobody left. And I would hate to, I'd really hate to see that happen. I think Seattle probably is going to re-sign Metcalf. I think they will. I don't know. It probably should have before this, but it not a lot of logic to letting them go out there to free agency. Now, one other thing to keep in mind here is when Barnwell asks how much could the Seahawks get for Metcalf, he lists all the teams that will be in on him. Buffalo Bills, Denver Broncos, Green Bay Packers, Houston Texans, Kansas City Chiefs, and then you get to the teams like you, Patriots fans. The Las Vegas Raiders, why would you go there? L.A. Chargers. I could see why you'd go there. New England Patriots. And here's what Barnwell writes. Like the Raiders, the Patriots can't satisfy the competitive prerequisite for Metcalf. They finished 4-13 last season, fired everybody, and hired Mike Vrabel as their new coach. They have the league's worst offensive infrastructure, and just about anybody they add this offseason would qualify as an upgrade on the players they ran out at receiver and O-line in 2024. Adding Metcalf would be like buying a great set of snow tires for a car with no engine. Ugh. Unlike the Raiders, the Patriots have a quarterback who might be enticing to Metcalf. Drake May spent most of his rookie season running for his life, but the third overall pick showed plenty of promise. With May on a bargain deal for years to come, New England has plenty of resources to add talent around him. Nobody should or would outbid them financially on a Metcalf deal. The other guy who knows the value of having an alpha wide receiver is Mike Vrabel, who was caught bemoaning life as the Titans traded A.J. Brown in 2022. Titans never recovered. Treylon Burks didn't live up to expectations. Brown racked up 119 yards and 2 touchdowns in a win over his old team. Titans fired their GM. Vrabel followed him out the door next year. Trading Brown didn't sink the Titans single-handedly, but lowballing him in contract negotiations and trading him for a player who didn't pan out set the offense back. Vrabel's not going to be naive enough to make that mistake again. I hope that's true. I hope that's true. I don't know if it's a question of being naive enough. I think that Vrabel wants to go out there and improve at wide receiver, but are they going to be able to, play that flute and charm that snake and get him to come to Foxborough? Because it's not going to be easy. It's really not. It's not going to be an easy path. You're going to have to make offers that's going to make ownership uncomfortable, and you're going to have to really sell a situation here in a franchise and an organization that is just not a destination. It's not. It's not a destination for winning. It's not a destination for players, as evidenced by the horrible report card that they got again, which is actually getting worse as years go by. I know eventually they're going to build that new facility, and some of those grades are going to get better, but not all of them. And look at these teams you're competing with. Denver, Kansas City, Houston, playoff teams. It's a trade, so DK Metcalf's not going to be able to choose where he goes. But where do you think he's going to want to go? And also, these teams can all make trades, too. You know, they can offer first-round picks, too. Are you going to offer 4 overall for Metcalf? I'm not. And if you're talking about future first or second-round pair or anything else, they got those, too. Other teams have those, too. 617-779-7937. Let's go to the phones. Joe is in Melrose. He has a thought on the Patriots. Go ahead, Joe.
Hey, Christian. Happy Sunday to you.
Happy Sunday, Joe. What's up?
Yeah. Ronnie Stanley, that one really stings. I was like... He was the only one where I thought in free agency it could be like a real difference maker. And then like it opens up the draft for you. You could have like if Travis Hunter fell to you, take him, or Andrew Carter, you take him, or maybe Tyler Ward. Basically, you're now held hostage. You have to take a left tackle in the first round. And it stings because it's like left tackles and quarterbacks get pushed up. The guy I like is Arante Ursay, the Minnesota left tackle. He's like 6'6", 330. He had pretty good tape against Abdul Carter. You could trade back. Like PFF has him going late, early second round. But basically, you have to take him the mid first round or late first round because like other teams need a left tackle and they got to snipe him. Like if you do the draft similar. So, I mean, but the Ronnie Stanley thing really stings.
Yeah, that's a tough one, Joe. Thanks for the call. Thanks for checking in. Good to hear from you. I do agree that it would have opened up the draft in a very real way. I would hate to think that they have to reach now for a tackle at 4 if they don't want one of those guys. Or if they think those guys aren't going to be tackles when they make it to the NFL and that they're going to have to switch over to guard. Like, I don't want to spend the 4th overall pick on a guard. I want it to be on a sure thing. I want it to be on someone that you feel very, very confident in going into the season, not a project. Not to cross your fingers and hope that this guy is going to outperform every other short arm tackle in the history of the history of the combine. What is it, was he the shortest arms in of anyone that's ever been measured or something? And he won at that position, I think it was. Great, that's great. And there's probably some tackles in this draft who can be good right away, and maybe not even a name that anyone's even mentioned. I don't even know that guy. He just mentioned some kid from Minnesota. I don't know. Sure, maybe. And there's probably some guys out there. Who knows? It's offensive line play.
Will Campbell's arm length was the shortest among offensive tackles at the combine since 2011.
Great. That's great. That's terrific. 617-779-7937. Let's go to David in Florida with a thought on the Red Sox. Hi, David.
Good morning, Christian.
Morning, David.
Let me get you off speaker.
Thank you.
There we go.
Appreciate it.
So did you fix your clocks today?
No, they all updated automatically. But yes, I have a 2-year-old, so I know this is going to be just hell on earth.
Okay. Well, you know, I kind of wonder about this. I mean, does time actually change, or is it just the way we punctuate time that changes? I mean,
that's a philosophical question, right? David. I'm not mentally prepared to answer it right now. What's on your mind, sports wise?
Oh, that's too deep for you. I understand.
It is. Yeah. It is today. It is. Yes.
All right. Well, you know, with the Red Sox, I mean, they have this. I mean, they've done an awful lot. I mean, I would give Breslau a B+ for the year right now for the offseason, what he's done so far.
Sure.
But the two concerns I have are they still have an eminent logjam at second base, and they still have a logjam in the outfield. Now, let me just throw this your way and tell me what you think. I'm trying to be a little. I don't want to be negative, but I got to throw this out there. If Devers is very reluctant to give up third base, if they get off to a bad start, say after the first 20 games, they're like 8-12 or even 500. If they get off to a bad start, can you see this exploding with Devers being angry? Say Devers agrees to go to DH at the beginning of the season.
He will do that, and I could see that getting bad. I absolutely could. Thanks for the call, David. I appreciate it. But we do have some breaking news. I said. Do we not have breaking news?
We do have breaking news, actually.
What is this? We have an actual sounder, don't we?
Do we
not have the sounder anymore?
I cannot find it.
Oh. Okay, well, this is a good fill-in, I guess. And I don't know if this needs to be major breaking news, but it is certainly for the conversation we were just having. Myles Garrett and the Cleveland Browns have agreed to a record contract extension. Schefter had this about 8 minutes ago. The Cleveland Browns and Myles Garrett reached an agreement today on a record contract extension that averages $40 million per year, including $123.5 million guaranteed, making him the highest-paid non-quarterback in NFL history. Well, that's what happens. You go out there and you say, hey, I love it here in Cleveland. Everybody's great, but I got to go somewhere and win. So please trade me. The owner won't even take a meeting with the guy. And then all of a sudden he gets a suitcase full of money to stay in Cleveland. And it looks like he's taking it. So there you go. Money really does. The dollar speaks the loudest. That's couldn't possibly be more true than you saw right here. The contract also includes a no-trade clause, so there you go. But you better get comfortable there in Cleveland, Miles, because I think you're going to be there for a while. 617-779-7937 is the phone number. All right, I've put it off for an hour. We'll get into the Bruins. That unlikely win that they had yesterday against the Tampa Bay Lightning, the hottest team in the NHL, by the way. What the future looks like without Brad Marchand, some more ramifications of the trade, and your phone calls, of course, at 617-779-7937. Sunday service rolls on right after this.